So, Katie, my name is Mark McMurray. I'm the Chief of Police in the City of Huntsville.
All right, and let's start off by talking about the training here at HPD. With 1,000 people at the first two protests, more than 1,200 people on Wednesday, of course, there had to be some training for these protests. So what sort of training for these situations have the officers received in preparation?
Okay, so the training with the Huntsville Police Department, we have a specialized squad of all hazard response members, approximately 50 members of the Huntsville Police Department. They're made up of uniformed patrol officers from all three shifts, and they get together one day a month, each month, and train on a different type of hazard. Some months they may train on active shooter containment control. The next month they may train on a hazardous spill, maybe a railroad spill or a fire that needs large-scale containment. Another month, they would train on a completely different hazard. Sometimes it's downed tornadoes, power outages. We had to do tabletops, and then they go out in the field and actually do the exercise. And then some months, they actually train on crowd control, movements, dispersal techniques, weapons and tactics used both by us and by counter-protesters.
So in light of what's going on with these protests across the country and here in Huntsville, I would assume those sorts of training techniques would be more emphasized in the training that they receive now.
Well, we have received our training for this month already. We've actually intensified it this week because of the crowd control requirements placed on us. We were able to implement some of our techniques and learn some new counter techniques by some counter protesters that showed up that was new. So they had some new techniques that we weren't aware of except through some intelligence that we gained through the Huntsville NAMAC Center. So the intelligence center had learned that some of these counter protesters would show up, and we kind of knew how they staged and what they did and what they looked like. And so we were well prepared for what they provided, and it was nothing that we weren't overwhelmed with at all.
Talking on what exactly police are learning in these training sessions, can you go into that and sort of discuss what exactly they learn?
Well, just communications is essential. As you saw, we pulled out a very loudspeaker and tried to address each and every one of them. The speaker even had a disorienting alarm on it to get their attention, to let them know that we are here to declare this an unlawful assembly. If you're there for a prolonged period of time, then the chief or the sheriff can certainly do that. And the best example I can give you of that is our Constitution says, because you do have the freedom of speech, you can stand on a corner and swing your fist as long as you want to. And you can stand there and swing both fists. And you can stand there and preach the word of Jesus Christ if you want to. That is our constitutional right. Unfortunately, if another citizen walks by and you hit them with your fist while you're executing your freedom of speech to swing your fist, then you have just interfered with another citizen's freedom to peacefully assemble or be there on a public walkway. So we all have equal rights under the law. And where our rights stop is at the nose of the next person walking up. So you do have the right to express your voice, your opinion, and that's what I'm here for, is to make sure you do that in a safe manner. Time and place is a consideration that has to be given when you're demonstrating, and that's for the courtesy and the safety of all citizens. You have to determine time and place. You can't walk in with a mob and take over a city because of your right to demonstrate, because you have just stopped every other citizen in that city from having the same equal right. And so if you truly believe in the rule of law, then you have to be courteous enough to share our rights with each other and demonstrate and protest in a time and place that's appropriate, and help us to provide a safe atmosphere for everyone to demonstrate and protest and express their opinions.
Now, I wasn't there personally, but did you see that happening? Did you see people who turned violent at some point and punched someone in the face? Is that why you bring up the punch someone in the nose example? Or
not at all. That example was given as merely an example of, you have the right to stand on the sidewalk, 100 people can stand on the sidewalk and demonstrate. They don't even need a protest permit. They don't need a reservation. They can stand there until they stop the rest of the society from going forward. So if you're blocking the road or you're blocking the sidewalk, let's just talk about sidewalk preachers. They have the right to stand on a sidewalk and preach as long as they don't stop other people from using the same sidewalk. You can't do that. So if they bring a giant stand, wooden stand, a platform, and they block 10 or 12 foot of sidewalk, and then they bring a loud electronic microphone, and they're yelling and screaming, and that voice is annoying and disrupting other people's privacy, then their right to freedom of speech no longer exists because they have violated other people's rights, constitutional rights of privacy. They have violated noise ordinances. They violated all other people's rights. So you have to be respectful of everyone's rights, and that's what law is provided to do. The law has zoning, noise ordinances, it has time and place assemblies, and there's plenty of places to protest. There's plenty of places to demonstrate. The very fact that 100, 200, or 300 people can rush and do a sit-down on a roadway stops other citizens from being able to conduct business or drive down that roadway. So how long do you let that exist? An hour? Sure. Okay, we'll stop traffic for a few minutes and let you sit in the middle of the street and protest. You want to go 2 hours? You want to go 3 hours? Or would you like to go all night? Now, my problem with all night is all intelligence in this country says the exact same thing. You can look at any city in this country, and when you allow protesters to dictate, their rights are more important than anybody else's rights in community or in a society, they become anarchist. They no longer have respect for the rule of law. And so what they do is they keep pushing and they keep pushing. And well, now that nightfall has taken over and they've been there for hours, they have to go to the bathroom. They have to go back home. They have to get other things. And they have to go eat. They have to drink. They have to replenish themselves. And nobody else can use that space. They have just violated the rights of every other citizen to use that space. They become unruly, and in every city in this country, they start damaging property, spray painting their rights and their opinions, because now their opinions are so important, and it is emotional. It's an emotional effort, and I understand that. But one person's emotions do not outweigh the law of this land. We have to express our emotions and opinions within the law. So they become riotous at that point. They burn down things. They trash the place. We saw it this week. When they were forced to leave downtown, what did they do? They spray painted the walls down Jefferson Street. They trashed buildings. They broke out windows. They broke out police car windows. Now, is that a peaceful protest? And why did they bring those things with them to the protest? Why did they bring those weapons of destruction? I'll show you photograph after photograph of knives, pipes, gas masks, eye protection equipment. That wasn't for their safety. That was for them to combat the police because they came there with no intention of obeying law.
I want to come back to this and talk about that, but I do want to address, we are still under a pandemic. People are still, you know, wearing masks and things like that. With your position, how do you use that to sort of encourage safety at these protests among the protesters who come?
Every police officer you saw out there, they couldn't wear their mask. They couldn't. They had face masks, and they eventually had to put their gas protective mask on. But when they were there for the hours and hours up to that, every police officer and sheriff deputy was risking their own health and the health of their family to be there to provide a safe venue for them to express their First Amendment right. When we worked out there, we couldn't wear a mask and perform and talk on the radio and communicate with each other. We just couldn't do it. And it just means so much to see so many law enforcement officers out there risking their own health just so a group could come express their First Amendment right. And we're all hurting over what we saw in Minnesota. We really are. What we saw should not have happened. And I will never argue that never needs to take place. I will argue that it never needs to take place, period. But these kind of things, to say that every police officer in this country out of 600,000 officers it will do the right thing every time is just not correct. We're human. We're going to find there are deficiencies within our law enforcement ranks, and we located a big one right here, and it's going to be taken care of. So let's get on with the next level and increase our training and transparency, you know, and make sure this doesn't happen again.
Obviously, we are entering summer months, and that's hot weather, especially hot weather here in Alabama. So that means, you know, there is risk for injury, there is risk for heat exhaustion. So can you talk about the plan that the city had to sort of set up maybe some medical stations around where the protest was happening?
We had three sites designated with paramedics from HMSE and with our Huntsville Fire paramedics. So we had three different locations so that any officer, if we observed anyone going through distress, maybe having a heart attack or any kind of medical condition, we could get them to a paramedic very quickly. And we do that for all large-scale events. That's part of our emergency preparations. We actually go through a prep before we have these staged events, like we do any kind of big special event. We'll sit down with all the commanders and we go over emergency preparedness, how to evac people, how to get in and out, how to get our fire trucks and ambulances in and out, where the aid stations are. We even do an emergency weather preparedness where if lightning's in the area, I will actually come in and cancel an event. And that's one thing I've had to do in the past when I was incident commander of Whistle Stop. I actually had to stop an entire thousands of people from the park and close the gates. And there were people paying, and they know this is an outdoor event. There's lightning in the area. We have a preparedness plan. So all of that is part of the staging and preparedness for special events.
You do have those stations set up. What capacity do these folks have to care for people who may need it?
They're all licensed paramedics, and so we can administer first aid, we can do hydration treatment. Of course, you can drink, but they also have IV capability at these stations and decontamination stations. We had wash pools and saline available at every location so that if anyone was contaminated with one of our dispersing agents and it was causing maybe an allergic reaction of some sort, or the person was just couldn't tolerate it anymore because it is a tearing or a lacrimator and it does make you tear up and where it's hard to see and it kind of makes you move out of the way. It's what it's meant to do. And if you panic by something like that, we have those stations set up and we'll render aid.
You already expressed a couple of violations people may be committing if they do stay past the permitted allotted amount of time to protest. So can you expound on a few more examples?
Well, there's disorderly conduct. There's inciting a riot. There's harassment. And there's simple assault. We witnessed a lot of those that took place. I'm actually, my police officers, my investigators are actually getting warrants on several citizens today for picking up items and throwing at officers. You can't lob an officer at a police, you can't just pick up a bottle of frozen ice or a brick or a rock or even a gas dispersant and throw at a police officer and not expect to get charged with that crime. That's assault of a police officer. So don't be surprised, some young people who might have done that, who were very angry, if we show up with a warrant for your arrest. We arrested 24, but we had extreme video coverage going on this event. And what we're busy over the next week is doing is looking who our violators were. And if we recognize them, we're going to go ahead and pursue charges on some of those people who assaulted our police officers.
And can you talk about the extent of the injuries suffered by the police? I did see the photograph of the one police officer who had injuries to his head.
They were luckily all minor on that night. We had none from Monday, but with the Wednesday event, there were a few officers suffered. And there were some simple hydration problems when you're trying to breathe through a mask for several hours and it's hot. So we had some lessons learned there where we need to monitor our own health a little bit better, because I had some officers nearly pass out on me. They were dehydrated. And again, the event can only go so long once those officers are out there wearing the all-black uniforms. And luckily, it wasn't that hot. That helped us a little bit. But you get out there 90 degrees or 100 degrees and all that gear and equipment on and those helmets and masks, and you will dehydrate within minutes. And so as the chief of police, I worry about the safety of the event organizers, the event protesters, and how long do you let something like this go? And what is my capacity to provide that level of safety for how long can I provide that safe venue for that? So you have to take all these into consideration.
So you mentioned before that before the non-lethal irritants are released, you definitely do go up and try to communicate with the crowd, you know, it's time to go. What other efforts do the police do in order to sort of disperse the crowd before resorting to those, you know, tear gas and flashbangs and things like that?
Yeah, so the first thing you do is stage it for success. So you provide them a safe area to vent and hopefully a good time and place. And then you prepare for those who want to go further, which we did. We had the whole courthouse blocked off. We didn't want a regular citizen just driving by and striking somebody, or we didn't want somebody throwing a rock at a regular citizen who's driving by. So we went ahead and blocked off the square, and sure enough, just like we expected, when the event was over, some people wanted to march, and so we had a place for them to march for a while, and they came up there and they marched around the courthouse. That part of the event was not permitted, but you know what? We're able to provide a safe area for that with very little resources. So come on up, let us be part of the success, march around the courthouse, rally there in the street for a few minutes, and they did, and then it's time to leave. I need to open up the shops, the businesses. As you noticed, how many of those businesses up and down the area had already boarded up their windows? They weren't open to do regular business hours that day, because of the fear that's brought on nationally by the few, not by the group at the NAACP, but the few people who tag those events at the end and cause problems. Everyone knew it was coming. This was not police mania. All those businesses up and down that paid people to come in and put up wood in front of their glass store shops, and all those people that wouldn't come to work downtown, that was not the police that did that. Every citizen recognized what was about to happen in Huntsville. This is not a police conspiracy. Every citizen in Huntsville knew what was about to happen. We all watch TV. We know what was about to happen. And sure enough, after the peaceful event, some people showed up, well-equipped, to fight the police. Not to protect themselves, but to disobey law. That's all they were there to do. The event was over. There was a group who didn't want to obey any form of government. Now, the organizers are called anarchists. The ones we captured are called young people who were just watching TV and thought, hey, let's go down and pitch in. I don't really call all those young people anarchists as much as I do followers of an event. They're just not, I raised a millennial myself. Well-meaning kids who are very emotional, I totally understand what's going on, but they have to also understand the rule of law. So if they don't agree with the law of order, let's change the law, and your law enforcement will enforce whatever law's on the books. Don't go violently protest to change the law. You go lobby the legislature who made the law, and then you vote for the people you want to make new laws. That's how we work in this country.
You mentioned the NAACP, and they were the organizers of Wednesday's peaceful protest between 5 and 6:30. How would you describe your relationship with the local chapter of NAACP?
Jerry Burnett is our local Madison County president, and Bernice, his wife. We're very good friends. And as you saw, I took a photo op with him prior to the event, and we talk all the time. And just a great individual. And we're, you know, the NAACP and I are tracking the exact same. We want, if you go down and look at their list, which I was made aware of yesterday, the things they want in law enforcement, you can probably check over half of those things off of the Huntsville Police. I agree with them 100%. The Citizens Advisory Council that we have had active for over 11 years in our department, those are all appointed by different people in the city to sit and oversee the police department's directives and their use of force. A lot of people don't understand, those citizens sit in our reviews. Every time an officer is involved in a shooting or a critical incident and somebody dies, citizens actually sit in. They rotate every time, but they sit in and listen and they watch the tapes, and they're not always easy to watch when you see the violence that happens that an officer has to face, but they do. We do have that level of oversight. We're kind of 4 years away from the body-worn cameras because we've been wearing them for 4 years now. But 4 years ago, it was the Citizen Advisory Council that was pushing for the body-worn cameras, and they were instrumental. Each member of our Citizen Advisory Council is appointed by a different city council person, and the mayor has two people, and I have two people. So I get two votes, the mayor gets two votes, and each city councilman has a different representative. So it's a wide variety of people who sit on the council, and they're reappointed every 2 years. And so it's a good council. It works, and I do agree with the NAACP that this level of transparency is something that's needed in the community.
We are talking about the people who are overstaying their welcome and how you all have a way of finding out who they are and sort of distinguishing them from local residents who showed up at first. So can you go into detail about maybe how the intelligence that you were talking about were trained to go and find those out-of-towners?
I'll tell you a little bit about it. I don't want to tip our enemy out on all of our intel. But I will say that we have one of the most robust intelligence centers in the country operating right now. So we have the NAMAC, the North Alabama Multi-Agency Crime Center. It's just staffed up right now by the Sheriff's Department here, by us, and Madison Police Department. But we also have the FBI, the Joint Terrorism Task Force members. We have the ATF, the several different U.S. Marshals Office that we partnership with. We have different groups that share intel with us as needed. And so when we look into these events around the country and you see commonality, and the commonality is the dress the same way, the markings on their uniforms, the strategic way that they embed themselves, and then they become active after dark. That seems always to be a key. And that's the reason all these governors and all these mayors who are instituting curfews, it's because the commonality of when the destruction takes place. This looting and firebombing and trashing, it doesn't happen in daytime. It comes out after the peaceful protests are done. Because they know that we need to protest. They know we need to vent. We all have emotions, and we need to express our emotions peacefully. And so they wait until this event is staged, and then they come in on the backside, and they move in from state to state. We've seen them transport. In fact, I had intel of two different groups coming here from two different states. And, you know, when you walked around downtown, look at the license plates of what you saw Wednesday. A bunch of people from those two states showed up. And where did they go right before the gas started? They all ran back to their cars and went to the next event. None of them were arrested. They're too smart. They know exactly. They staged this for this demonstration. They knew exactly what they were doing. We saw them on TV. We knew who they were. We chose not to arrest them because they were part of the group of protesters that we allowed to be there. So you can't just run in and grab them. They have the right to do that. We're allowing them to be there. We can see, we can pick them out. We know who's local and who's not. The sheriff and I and most of our drug enforcement agents who were all watching, we know pretty much who the troublemakers are in this county. These weren't them. These were from out of state. They came here just to cause trouble. And so a lot of our early intel said they were coming here. They came. We watched them. We can watch them come in through various ways. But they're back now, and they're setting up their next event. I hope it's not in Huntsville, because while we may change our tactics from time to time, like we did Monday to Tuesday, they were different tactics that we employed. Our position is the same. We believe in the rule of law, and we are not going to let Huntsville be destroyed because of the violence of a few instigators. And so Sheriff and I and Dave Jernigan, Chief of Madison, we're all unified on keeping our community safe.
With that said, I wonder, from what you have seen here in Huntsville, do you think that we may be headed toward being under a curfew?
I don't. By doing that, you're infringing on the rights of the good citizens. So you're letting a few little minor citizens dictate and violate the rights of all of the majority of citizens. And so I hope we don't have to do anything like that. I would certainly hope not. But again, that's a legislative type action that'll come from our lawmakers, not from law enforcement. I don't set curfews and I don't really give advice on it, but you asked me a personal opinion, so I'll give you a personal answer. I think Huntsville's a different place. I really do. And I hope what you'll see at our next event, and I'm helping to stage it now, is Huntsville Police and the Sheriff's Department, Mass. You'll see law enforcement marching with protesters and demonstrators. I've marched with Black Lives Matter before because I'm all about justice. That's what I risk my life for every day, is justice. And so I marched with the students at Oakwood College and their rally. And you'll see Huntsville Police Department marching with these groups. Again, if invited, we will definitely march side by side with you. And so we're actually looking for an event like that, and we're in the planning stages of it coming very soon.
And I would like you to talk about, do you feel any fear for our community or our nation seeing what's going on all across the U.S.?
Well, you can certainly understand the emotion and the healing that needs to take place, because anytime you see a person pass away in front of you, it is a very emotional event. And then you realize that that shouldn't have been happening. And then you go the next level and said, well, you know, the people that could have prevented that were the people who are in charge here. They had the badge and the gun, and they had the duty to provide the safety for that individual. And that trust that the community has in us to provide a safe net for our citizens was violated. And I think we got to earn that trust back now. I didn't commit that, but I'm law enforcement, and so I have to own it. I realize it was wrong. It shouldn't have happened that way. If you deprive somebody of their liberty and you put handcuffs on them, you are responsible for their well-being at that point. You can't punish them. You can't abuse them. You have to take them before a judge and make them account for their whatever you're charging them with.
I would like to look forward, you know, and see what you hope is achieved with all these protests. What sort of hopes do you have for Huntsville?
Yeah, I hope our healing is quick, and I think we can build a better relationship through working together. So, and that's kind of the reason I'm setting up this march together with the community. And I want people to, I'm going to bring my family. I hope people bring their families to it. And we'll have a couple short speeches, maybe have some religious leaders lead us in a prayer or two of solidarity for the same exact purpose. And we go on and we grow and we get stronger because of it.
Is there anything else that you would like to add?
To just let everyone know that Huntsville is different. Our police officers are different. They have the highest level of training in the state of Alabama. And so, by the way, our sheriff deputies do too. That while Huntsville Police trains their officers at 4 times the state standard, our deputies do too. Their 12 hours of CEUs a year is done by county commission. By state law, it's not even required. And our county commission requires our deputies to achieve hours of training every year that the state doesn't even mandate, but that's how serious they are about their deputies training. This county demands it. We have the highest education per capita of any location you're going to find. And so, as you saw this past couple weeks, we started an education drive to provide education funds for police officers. There are national studies right now that the higher education level of a police officer, the less likely they are to use excessive force. Now, that's pretty interesting. So what it says is, as a police officer goes through college, there's some level of education that provides them with information and a different perspective, and they are the least likely to provide excessive levels of force on your department. Now, how can I help? Well, we started the Billy Clardy Scholarship Fund with Calhoun so that the first 2 years of college would be provided for, and you can get this information on our website. I donate it. My wife and I donate to this fund every year. And you can donate and help officers go to college, because our battle is not just locking up bad guys, but we have to keep them there. We have to win the battle in court against lawyers. Let's provide a better education. So my new goal for the police department is to become the most highly educated department in the country. I want every police officer to have that opportunity for a college education.